Welcome to Cinema Joes, where three average Joes discuss the significant topics in movie culture. I am your host, Alex Marcus, podcast's editor for thepopbreak.com, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend, Justin Mancini of thecinemaverick.com. How's it going today, Justin?
Hey, Alex. Doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Doing good. Excited to be here. Unfortunately, our third co-host, Noah, is not with us today, but in his place, we have the film editor for thepopbreak.com and host of both the Way Too Early Oscar podcast and the winner still is, Marissa Carpico. How's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
I'm good.
Good.
With me hosting and Marissa joining us, you might have guessed by now that this is our annual Oscar nomination special. The 2021 Oscar nominees were announced last week, and we are going to be breaking down all the ins and outs of surprisingly uncontroversial awards fields. Highlights from this year include Best Picture frontrunners Minari and Nomadland, each getting 6 nominations, David Fincher's film Mank leading the pack with 10, and a surprise double supporting actor nomination for both Judas and the Black Messiah in the film Judas and the Black Messiah, which also had 6 nominations in total. This year was also notable for having a diverse array of actors and directors nominated, including the first time that 2 women and 2 people of Asian descent were nominated in Best Director, and the first time an Asian American actor was nominated for Best Lead Actor. In a minute, I will be asking both of you guys what your biggest surprises and biggest snubs were, as well as some of your predictions, but before we get into any of that, let me ask you your in general reactions to this year's awards. And before I do that, I want to remind you that I actually listened back to our episode from last year.
Really?
And we were really beaten down in that recording after I think the very disappointing 2018 Oscars and how disappointing many of those 2019 nominations were. So are you feeling any better today, Marissa?
I mean, about the Oscars, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so generally. in theory, I mean, you know, in general about life, you know, the perspective is very different, I would say.
Yeah, I guess that's true. There were other stuff going on around that time as well, although we had no idea what we were in for.
I mean, I think we can safely say that the last good thing that ever happened was Parasite winning Best Picture. I mean, it's been downhill since, mostly.
Yeah, pretty much from the day after that happened, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that's actually interesting because the fact that that was such an incredible win, I know I listened back to your Way Too Early Oscar podcast prediction special when you were talking about your Best Picture nominees. And you said in that, Marissa, that if Parasite won, you would openly weep in reaction.
Yeah.
So the fact that that actually happened, I think, kind of colored a little like our remembering of that whole Oscar season in a much more positive light than I think we were feeling when the Oscar nominations were announced back then.
Definitely.
You know, with all of that in mind, like, how are you feeling about this year's crop of nominations?
Mostly good. I mean, you know, there's a whole podcast of me sort of just, you know, making fun of a lot of these nominations. Like, I have almost no patience for Mank, frankly. I also watched, like, you know, my Letterboxd review is essentially saying that it's worse than Ryan Murphy's Hollywood, which is also a piece of shit. You know, I have no patience for that. I have a slightly more patience for Trial of Chicago 7. There's also like really good stuff in the mix. I do think overall it's kind of a like middling year, I would say. Like, there's not a ton of stuff I'm excited about, I would say. You know, I think maybe the biggest surprise for me and like joy was Shaun the Sheep Farmageddon being nominated for animated film. Yeah, I'm a Shaun the Sheep stan, so I was like really thrilled about that. But I don't know, a lot of the Best Picture stuff, it's a little, I have qualms about or didn't love. Like, I think I like the 2 frontrunners the most, but everything else is a little, it you know, I have reservations about or what I was disappointed by because it took so long to see it. So it's a strange year. I say this to Matt all the time about, you know, we go through old Oscar years, and I think in the whatever version of us, you know, comes along you know, two people who come along later to make a similar podcast in 50 years are going to be like, my God, what a terrible year 2020 was for film. Or like complain about it in the same way we did, like 1963, which is the Cleopatra year.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that over the last few years, you know, the Parasite win notwithstanding, my expectations have just been lowered so much that mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, as long as there's nothing embarrassing that's getting nominated, I'm happy, right? There's not like there's not yeah. something where you're like, oh my, not only is this not one of the 10 best movies of the year, this is truly yeah. one of the 10 worst movies of the year. and I feel like we kind of dodged that bullet. I mean, you know, Glenn Close in Hillbilly Elegy Oof. Notwithstanding, mm. but I mean, in another year that could have gotten a Best Picture nomination and gotten like 10 nominations, you know, I mean, yeah. like Joker got 10 nominations last year. Let's not forget. So, I think Joker is inexplicably a better movie than Hillbilly Elegy, but I mean, yeah. that's really.
It was also clearly one of the horsemen of the apocalypse. We didn't realize yeah. at the time, but it was.
I
one
mean,
of them.
People sounded the alarm. Or something. Yeah, yeah. sounded the alarm. We should have listened to them. But Justin, how are you feeling about Oscar nominations this time around?
You know, I'd say pretty good for the most part. I think you can definitely see the Academy, to a certain extent, still clinging to studio movies, although I would also say that a lot of those studio movies were on streaming services, just by nature of how we were able to watch movies last year. So I think while we are still seeing some of that, like things like Mank and Trial of Chicago 7 feel very predictable. They feel very much like the kinds of movies that they've awarded in the past. And yet, I do think we're starting to see some cracks in that. We're starting to see a little more love for maybe things that are off the beaten path. We're starting to see a little more diversity. As I think we say, no matter how we feel about the nominees each year, still a long way to go in that regard. but at the same time, maybe seeing a little bit of daylight, and I wonder if maybe a part of that is, I mean, I'd like to believe a part of that is because of the changing body of the Academy, and maybe they're just getting more people from more diverse backgrounds. And yet at the same time, I wonder if just the nature of last year might have had something to do with it as well. I mean, there certainly were some more bigger, I think there were a couple of big studio movies that got pushed back that definitely would have got a lot more awards pushed this year in a normal year. So I don't know. It's one of those things where if things had been different, maybe we'd see things a little bit differently. But I think it's a good precedent, at least. And I also have to say, I really liked seeing a lot of actors that I think, at least my guess is that the three of us are probably big fans of for years, that have given great performances and got their first nomination. People like Riz Ahmed and Steven Yeun, Vanessa Kirby, Leslie Odom Jr., Lakeith Stanfield. These have been people that, you know, have been great so many times before, and it's nice to finally see them getting some attention from the industry and from the Academy. And that's just a nice thing for them. I hope it bodes well for their careers.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like it's just the usual suspects. Like, certainly we have a couple of returning nominees, but there's a lot of fresh blood in there and a lot of people, like, kind of from around the same age group, kind of, that feel like they're finally starting to get into that tier where Oscars start to pay attention to them. So that's, I think, really exciting.
I agree with what you're saying about, like, I do think, you know, I'm making fun of the year a lot, but, like, I do think that the fact that other things got pushed back that usually would have gotten a huge award push, or, and like the nature of what got released last year ultimately helped push things forward in a way I don't think we would have seen so quickly. Like, I don't know if we had gotten the new usual slate, you would see two women in director. And I think it's great that we do, because both of them are, I think, you know, really good directors, and these pieces are really good. But I don't know if they would have made it, kind of thing. And I don't know if, like, Minari might have been the kind of quiet film that sort of got a lot of critical love and audience attention, but maybe wouldn't have, you know, made it into the Best Picture race like it has now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, like what are some of the ones that didn't get those releases? Like, we have the two big musicals, right? We have West Side mm-hmm. Story and In the Heights that were both supposed to come out. And, you know, if they were well received, you could imagine them kind of filling up a lot of these categories that have gone to these smaller movies. Are there any other ones that I'm not thinking of, Marissa, that got their that got their release pushed.
I mean, those were the two I probably would have been thinking of, especially West Side Story, you know, unless it's complete garbage. And also, I mean, now there's this sort of question of you know, like, is Ansel Elgort a problem that, you know, PR-wise, that's really going to make be an issue for the film? Like, I don't know. But, yeah, like, that would have, I mean, Steven Spielberg doing a remake of a classic film and a classic musical, a readaptation of a classic musical, and then In the Heights basically being, you know, a modern West Side Story, if you will, in a way that looks far fresher, right? Frankly, I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen really any footage from West Side Story, but I can't imagine there's no need for it, to be honest. Like, yeah, those would have, I think the West Side Story would have either dominated or have been the joke of the season, when In the Heights was sort of the better, younger version of its, of what it was trying to do, basically. Not because I think either musical is better than the other. I just think one justifies its existence and the other one doesn't. But yeah, I think those would have been, like, especially for the Golden Globes. I mean, they would have probably, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda probably would have won director or something, at the Globes, which isn't, like, or, you know, a problem or something. Like, he's not the director, but, like, what's his name? Like, that would have, he would have won another Golden Globe for something. I don't know. Maybe there's an original song in the credits, a new original song in the credits. Who knows? But, like, something would have happened. And that would have dominated, but that's not even, it's not even the conversation right now. And who knows, now that it's like a summer release and so much other stuff is going to get released, who knows if it'll, like, wait, you know, last till next year. But yeah, I mean, the West Side Story thing, I think, is the big, like, Matt and I were basically planning our whole season of the upcoming Winter Still Is around that sort of coming out, and it hasn't. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. I don't know. It's like, you know, our entire plans change, basically. And I'm sure the industry's too. Like, it's not like I'm saying, like, Fast and the Furious 9 or whatever would have been nominated. I mean, I would maybe nominate it for things, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, no, I think that's true, that a lot of the typical Oscar stuff that we got, we ended up getting by the end of the year, right? It got delayed, it got pushed to streaming, nobody got to see it in the theater. But I feel like most of the stuff that was intended to come out ended up coming out, except for those two things. But I think another interesting question mark is, you know, when Christopher Nolan makes a movie that is even moderately well received and makes, like, $500 million, it ends up in the conversation, at least for Oscars. And Tenet had its release just so completely bungled that, you know, outside of a cup, really just one technical nomination, I believe, just for visual effects, it just completely missed at Oscars. And I wonder if it had that big popular appeal, if that would have helped it kind of rank up, like, film editing or some of these other technical nominations. And, like, maybe there would be conversation about him getting into director, and I feel like he probably wouldn't have gotten in, but there wasn't even that conversation this time around.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would have helped if that movie had been more universally well received by the people who actually got to see it. And, you know, it's even out on, like, you can rent it now, but, like, I'm not even going to pay $5. I will wait till May or whatever when it comes out on HBO Max. I don't care at all. Like, you know, it's not appointment movies for me, because some of the reviews were so mixed. And then, like, you know, a lot of the people I trust who saw it were like, okay, it's fine, but it's, like, incoherent.
Yeah. And it's just, like, you know, like, if that's the reception of the movie, and then you can't see it in a theater where you know that's the ideal way to see it, it's like, okay, well, so I'm going to see, like, a mediocre movie in a mediocre setting, like, that, like, what is the draw there? So I understand why that's kind of an issue. And also, I mean, I wonder how much residual negative effects this movie has, given, like, everything that happened over the summer with its release, where it was, like, insisting on going into movie theaters even when it was so unsafe for movie theaters to be open, and then it did, and then, and, you know, I mean, people know what happened, basically, like, it bankrupted a bunch of movie chains, and, like, the some smaller movie theaters had to go out of business because of it. It was a disaster. So you wonder if it's paying a tax there too. But I think also you're right. I think some people just didn't like the movie very much, and that kind of
Well, the fascinating thing is they also re-released it in theaters right now, currently, and didn't really make a big fuss about it, which I find incredible.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I didn't even know that happened.
Oh, it's playing like in every theater in New York City right now. It's playing at the big IMAX in Lincoln. It's like, you know, it's just, I get it. I think they're just trying to get people back in the theater.
And I know that that's like New York City just opened their movie theaters for the first time. So maybe it was just like, as soon as movie theaters are open, Tenet goes into those theaters, even if it's 6 months after they want it. So
yeah, it just raises the question of like, why, I don't know. There's so many, it's the Nolan of it all. Obviously it's all, you could do a whole podcast on just the release of Tenet. I'm sure someone will in 10 years or whatever.
Hey, we got some leftover Nolan here.
Justin, do you have any thoughts about like the way that COVID has impacted these nominations?
Oh gosh. You know, I do feel like looking at this list, it kind of just made me think about considering that I've seen a lot of movies from last year at this point, and there haven't been a lot of favorites. I just don't know what that means in terms of you know, I guess the future. Like, it just seems to me like, I'm like, did I miss something? Like, and maybe, you know, it almost seems to me like there were supposed to be more movies that came out last year that I just missed or something. I don't know. I just look at a lot of these nominees, and there are a few that I still need to catch up with. So I bear all that in mind, but you know, there are others that I'm just kind of like, would this really have gotten nominated in another year? I mean, it just seems strange to me. Like, and some of these movies, I almost feel like would be more like niche kind of stuff, and yet they still like managed to capture the Academy's attention. And I think in some ways that's a good thing. I think in other ways, is it almost like, I guess we go with this thing, like we need to spill our slots. So I don't know. I have kind of mixed feelings about it. I feel like it's sort of reflective of the whole year to me, which felt like maybe a bit of an off year. Compared to some previous ones.
100%. The one that makes me laugh the most is like that Italian adaptation of Pinocchio. It's like, who, I had first heard of that as a joke, and then it got nominated for Oscars. It's like wild to me. Like, I don't understand. Like, I think like maybe I'm sure the costuming and stuff is, and the makeup is great or whatever, but it does feel a lot of like what I've been, sorry, there's so many sirens outside of my apartment, if you can hear them.
those are all for you?
Yeah,
it's the Pinocchio police coming after you.
I stole a painting from the Met while it was closed. It like is that a lot of this feels like a bunch of also rams that would usually be in the category of this had Oscar buzz, and yet they've all squeaked through because something feels like it's missing, but it's hard to say like what exactly is missing. But I don't know if that's just because like the things we expected to be released weren't released, or that like the usual awards push that would have happened late in the year didn't happen because by then studios knew what was happening. So they just didn't even mention it. You know what I mean? Like there's probably just projects I don't even know about that would have been released. Like that just didn't get like talked about, you know what I mean? Like it just feels like a bunch of also rans. Like I still think it's like, I'm sure Trial of Chicago 7 would have gotten nominated in a regular year, but I think there would have been less of a chance instead of it being like such a lock. And like, I don't know. I think Hillbilly Elegy, Glenn Close would have been pushed out no matter what.
Yeah, I don't know. The last few years, I just feel like, as I said before, I have such low expectations for the Oscars that I'm really genuinely shocked that, especially in this year, that the Hillbilly Elegy didn't end up with like 12 nominations, including Best Picture and Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay. Like it just feels like, you know, I mean, they nominated Green Book. They gave it the Best Picture award. You know, that screenplay beat Spike Lee, and it's like, yeah.
I mean, it speaks to how bad that movie is, that even the Oscars were like, no, thank you.
Truly, yeah. But so kind of moving off of that, I did want to ask, every year, Marissa, we have at least one Oscar villain, where it's like this, either an actor or a movie that is out, that it's just inexplicable that these people got nominated, and it would be kind of just like absolutely terrible if they won. And there's kind of, sometimes there could even be a lot of negative campaigning around them. Sometimes they're the cause of the negative campaigning around other people. Do you see any Oscar villains this year?
No, there's nothing like obvious. It's not like a Green Book year of like what are they thinking? Like, please don't do this. Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, for me, I will say, and I haven't really said this anywhere before, realistically, like even on our podcast, that I think Promising Young Woman has a lot of issues, like, frankly, like, I reviewed it for the website, and I just think it has a lot of great ideas, and then sort of it challenges nothing in the end. You know, it's a movie that I think is meant to challenge a lot of things, but ultimately I think reinforces all of the patriarchy it's trying to fight against in film, honestly. And I say that even still thinking that it's a well-directed film. So I have a lot of personal problems with it, but and I know, like, you know, feedback is mixed on it, but like there are people who like it, and if you find something in it that's fine, I don't get it, but like I don't necessarily think I would fight someone on it. But for me, it's the sort of like the one that frustrates me the most. Otherwise, there's nothing that makes me sort of furious like Green Book did a couple years ago. I mean, part of that is just I haven't seen a lot of this stuff. Like, I think that's the biggest problem with, or the biggest thing for me in, you know, difference between a regular year and the COVID year is that, like, typically I would just have heard of a lot of these things and walked and gone to the theater to see them. And I am far less likely to watch something on streaming, especially if I have to pay for it. I just don't care. There's just so much content out there that I have no interest in seeking something out. Even now, I mean, there's so much of this stuff that I probably won't even bother looking at. Like, you know, I made fun of it already, but I won't be watching Pinocchio. That's just full stop.
I genuinely didn't know that movie existed until it was nominated for like 3 Oscars. Like, what?
I mean, the way I heard of it was like YouTubers that I follow who talk about movies. They mistook it for the trailer for the Disney remake, and then were very confused, and then were like, "What is this?" So like, truly, I to learn of it that way, and then to be like, "Wait a minute. This thing is getting nominated for stuff? Are you kidding me? Like, they are scraping the bottom of the barrel on some of this stuff. Like, that Dylan O'Brien movie, Love and Monsters, getting nominated for whatever it got nominated for, special effects
for
or something.
Visual effects, yeah.
Oh, goodness. I don't even think I would have, like, I think he's hot, but even I don't think I would have seen that in a theater unless I was so bored that I just was like, all right, I'll see this thing. It's like, what is going on in this? Some of these categories? It's like, who, like, what directed video kind of stuff is this? Like, I don't get it.
The visual effects nominations, I think, really show the lack of blockbusters this year, right? Like, Oscars are, they're always a little bit hesitant to even in that category to, like, give, like, a ton of nominations to, like, Marvel and DC stuff. But still, like, it's just like, oh, there was nothing with visual effects this year, basically. This is what we're, like, Midnight Sky is apparently, like, the front runner in that category. And that's, like, a movie that, I don't know, I haven't watched it because I heard it was terrible from everyone. And I mean, that doesn't mean it doesn't have good effects, but it's certainly not an effects-driven film, is it? Have you seen it?
I watched it, and I'll tell you, I don't remember a damn thing about it, honestly. It is so downbeat. It is so downbeat. It's got a nice score, but it's glacially paced and, like, you know, mildly and quite melancholy, which is like, who needs it in this moment, girl? Like, I don't need to self-reflect. I'm already doing it. I'm at home.
Yeah, that was their big, like, Christmas break release by Netflix.
Yeah, get real. I mean, Netflix, what are y'all doing? Like, I watched Sylvie's Love twice before I got to Midnight Sky. I only watched it because it was nominated for the Golden Globes, like, honestly. And, there are good special effects. It's space stuff. You know, space stuff is always going to be mildly interesting. But, yeah, it's like, it's bizarre that, like, you know, this is what we got. Because usually it absolutely would be like, you'd probably still have Tenet, maybe you would have Midnight Sky, and you would probably have something like Black Widow or whatever, or you know, maybe one of the Fast and Furious movies or whatever it was supposed to come out, or possibly that Jungle Cruise movie from Disney, like, you know.
Yeah, you think that would have taken the one and only Ivan's spot in that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it certainly would have been the best CGI animated animals of the year, considering the only like other competition was like what, Doolittle, and I guess Love and Monsters, although monsters are maybe not animals. It's, you know, I'm not a zoologist, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess you're right. We did still somehow manage to dodge a Doolittle visual effects nomination, so at least At least we have that. I just have a lot of sympathy for the people.
That's except for me. That was one of the last movies I saw before they shut the theaters down.
We'll be spared the dragon enema in the montage of visual effects nominees.
Yeah. I don't know. It's Steven Soderbergh is the one producing it. He's producing the Oscars this year, and a dragon enema seems right up his alley, so we might get it in a different montage.
It's such a surreal choice for the producer of the Oscars, honestly, because, like, I don't know. That's not someone who's really into, like, Hollywood pomp and circumstance. They're going to be wild. I mean, I hope so, anyway.
I can't wait. I hope that, like, they do a whole segment where it's just, like, a camera like on a live feed that's playing on an iPhone. Like, that would be excellent. And then the camera just does like 360 degree spins all the time. Like, that'd be awesome. I'd love that.
I'd pay for it. I'd love to see that.
Or like,
this would be the year to do it. I mean,
yeah.
Like, you have like Angelina Jolie like presenting an award and the camera just like loses interest in her and like veers off to look at a corner of the set. Like that'd be awesome. But anyway, I feel like Steven Soderbergh being producer is one of the many pleasant surprises this year. Justin, can you give me another pleasant surprise that you had in these Oscar nominations?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a pretty simple one, which is just seeing two women nominated for Best Director, which, you know, I'm sure for a lot of, you know, casual moviegoers, they're probably like, wait, there were two women who directed movies in 2020? But, you know, it's like, it's nice to see that finally we're that they're extending a little bit beyond what has been typical, which is we're lucky if we get one. And you know, I thought it was I still need to see Promising Young Woman, so you know, I can't speak to that, but I will say that it's nice to see the fact that not only is this her first nomination for Best Director, but it's her debut film, which I believe puts her in good company with people like Greta Gerwig. And then you've got the other nominee, Chloe Zhao, who is kind of the front runner right now for Best Director, which would make her not only the second woman to win, but also the first woman of color to win. So there's, you know, there's some potential barrier breaking in here, and I think that's a good sign. I think there was definitely there were a lot of predictions that Zhao was going to be nominated and would probably be the front runner, but it's nice to see Emerald Fennell as well in there. And you know, I don't know, it seems like that film's getting a lot of buzz. I may be talking a little bit about it later just in terms of the buzz that's been getting, because I was really, really surprised by that. But yeah, I think it's nice to see more of that. Obviously, I think we'd like to get to a place where the content of the work is the most important thing, and I think there's probably a lot to talk about in both films, even if one might be a little more successful than the other one. But it's nice to see, and hopefully we get to that point where it's about the work. And a reminder that women have been and are working in the film industry.
Are you sure, Justin? Because I don't know, I've seen a lot of like guys on Twitter being like, name three good directors that are women, and like people are usually stumped. So I'm kind of surprised that you're even saying this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get into a little bit later.
They haven't watched Yentl, but... and that is a big blind spot for a lot of people.
It's true. You can always tell when they haven't seen Yentl.
Yeah, I mean, I was a different person until I saw it, and it's like, wow, I can't believe I lived this long. I made it this far without Yentl. I lose living half a life.
So, Marissa, how about you? What is your pleasant surprise in this kind of a sea of good but not great movies?
I mean, honestly, it was probably the Farmageddon situation. I watched that very early in quarantine because I saw it on Netflix and I was like, oh, I love those Shaun the Sheep movies. Well, I love all of those, that whole studio stuff. You know, they do all the Wallace and Gromit stuff. And
Aardman.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the biggest one for me, was because I just didn't know it was going to happen, frankly. So it was like a thrill to be like, oh, great. I loved that. I don't know if it's a surprise necessarily, but like, I am thrilled by how much like love Love Sound of Metal got, which mm-hmm. is a movie I watched pretty late in all of this, but like was quite impressed by for a number of reasons. Of the ones that I've seen since the nominations came out, I will say that octopus movie and documentary free feature really just really messed me up. I was very impressed by it. So, you know, who'd have thought? I mean, I remember seeing it on Netflix, the title, and being like, what kind of, you know, kinky fantasy yep. thing is this? Like, I'm not, I'll put it in my queue or whatever. Cause I'm like, oh, it's Lynette, you know, the title is misleading, but like, you know, what could this possibly be? And then I watched it and I was like, oh my God, this is everything I'm looking for. But yeah, I mean, in terms of surprises, I don't know. I mean, I've mentioned them all as jokes, frankly, at this point. Like, truly, that Dylan O'Brien thing getting nominated blew my absolute mind.
Well, remember, it's pleasant surprises. I don't know if that would qualify as a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it was – I think part of the reason – it's hard to define one for me because it was like other than the Farmageddon thing is that, like, so much of this felt – there were so few films that came out that would have been Oscar – contenders that it felt like so many of these were already talked about by the time we got to them, and that's true every year, but it really felt that way this year because there wasn't such a big pool of stuff. It was just like, oh, of course, we're just slotting these things in where you always expected them to be.
Well, and we also had a lot more time, you know. I mean the Oscar nominations are coming out in March after like pretty much the week that the Oscars usually air. So we like, you know, in a lot of ways, the campaign season was running from late summer all the way until March. So, you know, a solid 6 months of Oscar campaigns certainly makes things kind of settle into place by the time you get to Oscar nomination morning.
Yeah.
But for me, my pleasant surprise was actually jumping off of something that you said, Marissa, the Best Supporting Actor nomination for Sound of Metal's Paul Raci, because I watched that film a couple months ago. I really liked it. And I thought that his performance was just excellent. In our Best of the Year episode, I spotlight him as one of my favorite performers of the year. And I think it's just the type of role that so often does not get celebrated at the Oscars. It's oftentimes like, oh, like it'll get a lot of attention from like critic bodies sometimes, and it'll be like, oh, this is like the actor's kind of performance, and then it just never like kind of, it's always like number six or seven on the list. And so I know that, you know, for the last month it was kind of assumed that he would fill in that last slot, but I was still worried, and I kind of doubted that it was actually going to happen, and I'm so glad that it did, because he's like I said, he's just one of my favorite performers of the year. It's just such a quiet and understated performance, and it just is so lived in, to the point where I know a lot of people who watched the movie thought like, oh, he must actually be just like a guy that they found and just gave this kind of like amateur performance, because it just feels like this, he's living this life, and that's not the case. He's just a traditional actor who just did a great job in the role, so I was really happy to see that.
Yeah, and he was, as far as I could find, he had not been nominated for either a Golden Globe or a SAG, so it was even more of a surprise from that standpoint. And I think that I remember reading the AV Club, they did a reactions article to the Oscar nominations, and I believe A.A. Dowd said, you know, this is someone who didn't even have a Wikipedia page until recently. So it's kind of a nice thing to see him now, like with a full blown Oscar nomination. I agree. Like I absolutely loved him as well in that movie. And I think I even remember you asking me, because I think you had seen it, and I told you that I had seen it. You said, who was your favorite performance in that? And I was like, actually, I got to go with Paul Raci. Like, I didn't know him before this, but I just loved how just natural he was. And then I found out that was also your favorite performance as well.
Yeah.
Well, so. Great minds.
And that's to take nothing away from Riz Ahmed. Like, he's excellent in the film, and he so deserves that leading performance. But in a lot of years, like, he would just become sort of like the figurehead of that movie and would be the only thing nominated for it, because it's such a small and quiet film. And instead, you know, it got a bunch of nominations. It got Best Picture, which is just really, it's just such a pleasant surprise, because it really is one of my favorite 10 films of the year, and not everything in that list is. So I was very happy to see it there.
Yeah, I mean, in any other year, I almost feel like Riz Ahmed would be a contender for best actor. But I mean, it would be shocking if Chadwick Boseman doesn't win it.
Yeah, it really seems like everyone is just kind of like running for second place in that category, yeah. Which is, you know, understandable. I mean, Chadwick is on his own incredible in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. He was also one of my favorite performances of the year. It's just an electric performance. And then, of course, knowing that it's the last chance to award him such an honor, definitely contributes to it as well. But I really think that it's so strong that he would be a front runner even if that wasn't the narrative. But, you know, it really felt like over the last few years he was slowly building that sort of, like, he was this young guy who was getting a lot of, like, flashy roles in movies where his performance was kind of a little bit better than the movie maybe, and people were saying, like, well, we'll wait and we'll give it to him the next time, you know, he has time to kind of get there. And unfortunately he didn't, and now this is his last chance. So it would be, like you said, shocking to see him not win. I was really surprised that he didn't get the double nomination, honestly. I thought, you know, if Scarlett Johansson could get a double nomination last year, certainly Chadwick could for Ma Rainey's in lead and The Five Bloods in supporting. But, you know, unfortunately, The Five Bloods did not have the level of support that it should have on Oscar nomination morning. And that kind of leads us into our next topic, which is biggest snubs. So, Marissa, what was your biggest snub this year?
I mean, I think the The Five Bloods sort of conversation is it, like, everything about it. It's like, how did that movie disappear completely? I mean, the probably because of just the onslaught of stress and anxiety last year sort of makes July of when it came out seem like 600 years ago. But it's incredible that movie wasn't nominated in like six categories basically, because there are so many things that are worth nominating about it. I think it's a flawed film, certainly. Like, I reviewed it for the site, and like, you know, it's not like it's Spike Lee's best work, but all of his work is interesting even when it's kind of messy, and I think that's true of that film. But it's incredible that Delroy Lindo was originally like the front runner for whatever the Oscars were going to be at that point, and then completely disappeared from the conversation by the time we got to Oscar nominations. Like, directing wise, I would say the work he does, Spike, for this movie is more interesting than, like, you know, quite a few of the nominees for that actually made it in. You know, like I've already said, Fincher, you know, doing whatever he was doing with Mank, like, is not nearly as interesting as what's going on with The Five Bloods. Like, I haven't seen another round, so I can't say. But actually, I mean, you know, the directing category is better than I thought it was going to be. I forgot Sorkin wasn't nominated.
Yes, thank goodness.
Thank God. Yeah. God bless America.
not to tip my opinion that much. I mean, I'm a huge Aaron Sorkin fan as a writer. I mean, most of his best work is behind him, though. And it just, like, the idea that he would get into that director's group is just crazy to me. It's like, ridiculous. It would be bananas if that happened. I mean, yeah. Certainly worse things have happened, but I'm just so relieved that it didn't.
Yeah, but, like, Lee is, I don't know, I think, I don't get what the Academy doesn't get with him, because, like, yeah, not everything is interesting, but, or fully works, but so much of his work is so interesting that, like, you know, like, doing this, like, lame Hollywood pastiche that's not very, very good, and, like, pulling a performance from Gary Oldman that is deeply embarrassing, like, that deserves a Best Directing nomination. Get real. I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with also, you know, Netflix had a lot of pots boiling this year. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I know our good friend Matt Taylor had a conspiracy theory from the start that Netflix was going to not push The Five Bloods and instead push a few of the other films that it had to run. And certainly I think that's been proven correct. So not much of a conspiracy, just fact, unfortunately. And it's, you know, it is hard to balance, and certainly The Five Bloods is not, as you said, it's not a shoe-in for anything. It's a challenging film, it's a messy film, but it has such brilliance inside of it, and to see it just shut out, especially in a year like this, is very hard to...
It's fascinating that Netflix a couple years ago was the black sheep of the Oscar race, this sort of, like, taboo thing of, like, it's going to ruin theaters, and then this year it is the number one purveyor of cliche Oscar bait.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they just are determined to get Best Picture winner. And so they were like, oh, we're going to do art house. We're going to give Alfonso Cuarón all this money to make his like dream project in Roma. And then the Oscars were like, no way, we won't honor that. We refuse. And so instead they were like, okay, well, what if we just give you exactly what you want, like directly to your veins? Will that work? And I guess we'll see. It's certainly working better in terms of nominations.
Yeah.
But Justin, how about you? What was your biggest snub?
So for this one, I had no Best Picture nomination for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom or One Night in Miami. And I know there was a lot of the conversation around these films was about performances, and both films did get at least one nomination for a performance. But I thought for sure that these were the kinds of movies that at least, if not, you know, would have a chance at winning, that would at least get on that in that group of films. And in fact, because of the weird way that the Oscars work and how they vote for Best Picture, there were two open slots that they just could not give to those two films, because that's how they work. And I understand it on a certain level. On another level, I think it's completely crazy. If you can't come up with 10 movies from a given year, given all the movies that come out, I still really don't like it, but I guess I really thought that at least these were going to get in the mix for Best Picture. They have a lot of the ingredients that you expect from maybe more traditional Oscar films. They have a pedigree behind them. You know, one of them is directed by a recent Oscar winning actress in the director's chair. I mean, it's really strange to me. And I get that, like, technically, yes, Bozeman is the front runner for actor. Leslie Odom Jr. did get a nomination. And yet I also just feel like there almost seems to be this, and I don't know if it's conscious or not, or if it's even that sort of intentional, but it almost seems to be this hostility against what the Academy may perceive as filmed plays as opposed to films. Mm. That seemed to be the one sort of common denominator there. And I don't know if that's the case, but it is interesting that those of the films that tackled maybe some similar, at least tackled the issues of race, that you had Ma Rainey, One Night Miami, To Five Bloods, which obviously is not a film play necessarily, but you did have Judas and the Black Messiah, for example. So I just wonder if there was something about these films that maybe was just not cinematic enough to the Academy, at least not enough to nominate them for Best Picture.
There was a squareness to the Academy, you know, like a lack of progressive, or not even that, like, you know, it just feels like stuff your parents would like, you know, eternally. And, you know, Judas is, and the Black Messiah is, I'm not saying it's like, you know, obviously it's far more complex and like challenging material than a lot of the films that are nominated. But like, it is, I think it's sort of a classical structure, maybe, or a classical idea of what revolutionaries look like on film, if you will. And One Night in Miami and Ma Rainey are a little trickier. So maybe that's, you know, I mean, this is an Academy that is not good with tricky material. You know, they gave Best Picture to friggin' Green Book a couple of years ago. So it's like, of course these, you know, maybe this one was just more palatable for them. I don't know. I mean, who knows? But yeah, I can see both of those being not quite so palatable because they are far more challenging and far more about, I mean, they're all three about discourse, but I don't know. You're right. I think there is possibly the staginess of it, which is interesting because, like, if you would have gone back 30 to 40 years, anything adapted from a play would immediately get a Best Picture nomination, but things have changed, you know?
Yeah, I think that, like, part of it is there is this idea of, like, well, if it has to be, it has to be cinematic. And what cinematic means is that, like, the director moves the camera a lot, which is not what cinematic means, you know? Or it has, like, giant, huge scope, which, like, yeah, that's great. Movies can be that. But movies can be a lot of other things, too. Yeah. I think also, unfortunately, you know, You don't want to judge a group by its worst members, but certainly we've seen enough of those like brutally honest Oscar ballot things mm-hmm. over the years, which kind of suggests like, well, I'm an Oscar voter and I have one slot on my ballot for the Black movie, and so this year it was Judas and the Black Messiah, and that's it, you know, and like you don't want to think that that's what's going on, but certainly we've gotten evidence in the past that that's how some of these voters at least think, and you know, because it's like, oh, well, we're not racist. We nominated one of them for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. I mean, did you really expect us to nominate three? And, you know, unfortunately, I feel like that's at least what some of these people think.
Yeah. I mean, there were articles of that type like last year when Parasite was a big contender that people were like, I remember reading one where some member was like, you know, that's not even a film from here. Why are we going to give that Best Picture? It's like, it is the Best Picture of the year. Like, what's the, you know, does it matter? It's like, are you examining why you're so like freaking out about that? But yeah, I mean, that's the thing about, I think that's important to remember about the Oscars, and that like, I think about a lot because my whole life is about voting and the way people vote. And like, you know, the Academy is larger than it is, but it is important to remember that technically the pool of people voting is relatively small when you compare it to any sort of voting thing. Like, idiosyncrasies can even out in a larger, the more people you have voting. But really, this is just a group of idiosyncratic people, like artists and, you know, industry people making bizarre choices. And this is the result. Every year is this incredibly strange mix of sort of like ego and past knowledge and own preferences. You know, it's like those articles always pull back the curtain a little bit. And I know Matt Taylor is absolutely horrified by them. He won't even read them, but I love to read them because it is this sort of encapsulation of like, listen, this is how we get the weird things we do. It's that, you know, these are individuals who are, you know, have very specific taste. Exploiting that taste, or you know, putting that taste onto a large group of things that like to everyone else seems obvious, but to them is completely, you know, unique.
Yeah, definitely. I would say like just quickly that my biggest snub was specifically Delroy Lindo for Best Actor mm-hmm. for To Five Bloods. We've talked about it a lot, so I don't need to go too far into it, but he just gives such an incredible performance, and he's obviously a fantastic actor who's been doing a lot of great work for decades, and this really just seemed like a great opportunity to, you know, to showcase this man who really deserves the acclaim, especially in a year, you know, he's not going to win, right? So, like, why yeah. can't you give that slot to him? And it's just really disappointing to see it go to Gary Oldman in Mank because like he just won an
mouth
Oscar
acting.
Recently like he like, doesn't need to be nominated, and it's just I don't know people who like who likes that performance. It's crazy to me, like even people who like Mank, I can't believe like him in Mank that much. Like he's like a 65-year-old man playing like a 38-year-old man. Like what, like why? I just don't understand why that had to happen. I don't understand why we needed to vindicate it with a lead actor nominee. Yeah.
It's that, and it's the terrible bad drunk acting too. It's like, stop it. It's so like, I don't know, performative in a bad way. You know, it just feels like a performance in a sort of overly and rein him in, Finch. Jesus.
And like he's doing so, like there's this one scene where he's on having this like giant drunken rant or whatever, and he's doing so mm-hmm. much. Yeah. And Amanda Seyfried and Charles Dance just like act like they steal the
circles
scene
around
with just
him.
With just glances, like they can they do more with just glances than he does with an entire drunken monologue where he throws up on himself. Like it's ridiculous. And I don't know.
Yeah. And to me, like that nomination, and there are a couple others here that almost feel like nominations that were made before the movies were even seen. Like Gary Oldman in a movie about old Hollywood, you know, he's been nominated once, once it almost is like a matter of course he's going to get nominated. And yeah, I don't understand it. I don't even think people who like it a ton, so it just seems very perfunctory. And yeah, like I agree with you, took away a slot. And weirdly, like Delroy Lindo, I feel like in that movie is giving a performance that I'm surprised Academy voters, even if they didn't like the movie, didn't respond to. I mean, it's towering, it's undeniable, it's in your face, it's someone who has been involved in a lot of different movies over the years. And like, this seems like the kind of thing that would get him the attention from the industry. And just now, I guess they really just didn't like this movie.
And the Delroy Lindo thing is putting him in lead might have been a mistake this whole time. Like, he really probably is lead of that film, but I wonder if he would have had a better chance in supporting.
I don't know. There's a lot of stiff competition. Like, I think he maybe could have gotten a nomination in supporting, but I don't know. I mean, especially when you see, like, they didn't nominate Chadwick in supporting. So maybe they, you know, I think that people just, I think a lot of people didn't watch this movie. And I think the people who did, I agree with you, Justin, in terms of, like, Delroy Lindo is giving the kind of, like, it's not a quiet and understated performance, right? And oftentimes Oscars overlook quiet and understated for bigger performances. Sometimes, like, more acting is better acting in their eyes. And certainly Delroy is really big in this movie, but he's also very confrontational, and he's confrontational as an African-American man. And I think a lot of people who are voting on the Oscars are not going to be receptive to that because they don't want to deal with that confrontation that that performance is requiring of them. And I think, you know, I don't want to just be to minimize the conversation to just like, oh, well, it's because there's a bunch of old racists in Hollywood, but like there are. And I think that you can't ignore that also. So I was honestly never surprised, but I was always disappointed. And here we are. But anyway, now we're going to move on to our Best Picture winner. But before we do that, I thought it would be kind of fun to look back at what we said last year, to pull some receipts. And I think it's interesting just because we always record this usually like about a week after the nominations are announced. And then there's usually about 5 weeks between then and when the Oscars happen. And most of the Guild Awards get announced during that time. And the narrative really shifts and kind of solidifies. So I feel like this is like that moment where like anything is possible, or at least more things seem possible. And then suddenly by the time you get to Oscar night, it seems like a foregone conclusion with most stuff. For Oscar Best Picture last year, Justin said, do you remember?
Did I predict 1917?
You did. You predicted 1917. And you maintained that prediction all the way through the end, because you know we update our Oscar predictions, me, Justin, and Noah at the end for our little contest that we do. And so Justin said 1917 first, and he kept it with it the whole time. Noah, on the other hand, said Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and by Oscar night he switched over to Parasite, and he was correct.
Wow.
So good for you, Noah. I, on the other hand, was way off base. I said Irishman, which just like I really thought that was going to be possible, and then that just completely collapsed in the 5 weeks between when we recorded and when we had the Oscars. But I have to give myself a little credit, because I did say if Parasite won the SAG Ensemble, it could win, and Parasite did win the SAG Ensemble and then did win. Unfortunately, by then I had changed my mind and said that it would be 1917, so I still lost. And Marissa said Joker off the fact that
I went dark.
Yeah, you went dark. You were being it was your villain origin story, Joker getting the Best Picture nomination, the win. And I combed through your Best Picture nomination special that you did for the Way Too Early Oscar podcast, and you never really, I couldn't pin you down. You never really gave a specific prediction. So I don't know, on Oscar night, what did you think? Were you still thinking Joker, or?
I don't think I had an idea. I think maybe by then I might have thought Parasite because of the SAG nomination. Or the SAG win, but I don't think I knew. I just think at that point I was so the outcome based anxiety of the last 4 years had made me so stressed out that I probably did still think on some level that it would be Joker, or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Apologies to those who like it. It's funny, I went to a theater to watch the show, a local theater where I live that has like dinner and stuff at tables. And the couple next to me was like, I mean, Parasite is okay, but it's no Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I was like, if anything but Parasite wins, I will be so angry, because I want these white hipsters to be so disappointed. And boy, were they disappointed. They were like borderline angry. And that was the highlight of my year. I've been living on that for a whole year.
And you really needed it too. So I needed it. Great that you had that. That's I'm so happy for you. But so, okay. So Justin, now kind of flash forwarding all the way to this current moment again. Who do you think is going to win Best Picture this year?
So I feel like I'm going to go with where the smart money is, which seems to be Nomadland. That said, there's like a creeping sort of dark thought in my mind that maybe Trial of Chicago 7 could pull it out because it's a little more traditional. I'm going to stick with Nomadland. That'll be my prediction. I think it's going to be the one I end up going with. It's got a lot of nominations, adapted screenplay, director, actress, and I feel like just the subject matter. I mean, it still seems very topical. I feel like in a year where everybody kind of got to know what it was like to live alone, to have a movie that's about that, even if that wasn't necessarily the intention, I think could be really helpful for it. There's just a lot going for it. And I think the fact that Zhao is the front runner for director, I think it's favorite in a lot of other categories, including cinematography. I just think all of that seems to point to Nomadland. And I think it might face a little more competition than we maybe think right now, because it is such a front runner. But I think that is the one that I'm going to settle on.
Yeah, I'm going to hop on with you and say I'm following my heart and I'm going with Nomadland as well. It's my favorite film of the year. I think it's the only truly great film that we've had this year. And it's, as I said, and amongst a lot of very good films and some okay films. And I just oftentimes end up being cynical and rooting for the movie that I don't want to win, but think will, and then when I'm right, it doesn't feel good. And when I'm wrong, it doesn't feel good. So I'm just following my heart and I'm going with Nomadland as well. How about you, Marissa?
Yeah, we're 3 for 3 on that. I think it's got the best shot so far. I mean, maybe things will change once the SAGs and such come out, but I do think it has like such good buzz and like industry feeling that I'd be a little surprised at this point. I think something really drastic would have to happen, like a severe backlash for it to really lose at this point.
Yeah, there's a little bit of chatter around the idea that it's not harsh enough of a critic to Amazon, and I hope that doesn't like submarine its chances, because that's just such a bizarre misreading of those scenes in the movie, in my opinion. And I just don't understand.
Yeah, well, it's also a misunderstanding of like what that's sort of displaying, this like gig economy, as it were, or this sort of like absolute that's all that's left in that town, realistically, is this like job we all know is bad, basically.
Right. Like the big,
it's not the film's fault that the economy is falling apart, you know?
Yeah, and like it presents this kind of, I don't know, it just I did not walk away from that movie thinking, wow, thank goodness Amazon is there to give these people jobs. Like, that was not what my takeaway was, and I just don't understand people who think that's what, like, because, and I feel like it's disingenuous. I feel like the people who are upset aren't saying that they thought that. I feel like they're just saying that the movie needed to be more explicit so other people don't think that. And it's like, how about trust the audience a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
If you got what they were going for and I got what they were going for, then what are we upset about, you know?
Yeah. Can't we all just assume that people know Amazon is evil at this point? My goodness. Let's give us a break.
Multiple Oscar nominee, Amazon.
Marissa, don't say that too loud. My Amazon Echo might hear.
So is mine, but she and I have an adversarial relationship, so that's expected.
Yeah, she tried to crash the last podcast we tried to record together.
Here, Sylvie, but you know, they are even.
And I do want to say, Noah was nice enough, even though he can't be with us today, for continuity and historical purposes, he did give me his Best Picture prediction, and it's 4 for 4. He also predicted Nomadland. So if it doesn't win, I think we're going to be all very disappointed. That's what we've learned. but now, and I think like the other alternatives are, like we said, Trial of the Chicago 7, which I think we all just like, we really hope that doesn't happen. Like, it's not a terrible movie, it's not an embarrassing movie, but it's just not worthy of that honor next to these films, so hopefully that's not the case. And then there's Minari, which is also a great film that I liked a lot. I think all of us liked it, at least a little bit, and that has kind of had like a an uptick in its support in the last few weeks. So I think it's interesting if the race comes down to those three movies where it shakes out. But it just seems like Nomadland has such a clear advantage and such a head start. So I guess we'll see what happens. But now moving on to our last segment of the day, we always like to do this kind of this last bit before we close out, where we each make a bold prediction, just something kind of like big and just like really shooting our shot, taking our chance. Marissa, what is your bold prediction for this Oscar season?
Wow, I don't know if there's anything. That is tough. I don't know, maybe a Glenn Close win, actually. Because I think nobody really thinks that performance is really that good. I think we're all just like, you know, it's time kind of thing. And like, at the moment, I think it is kind of a joke to think that she could have a possibility of doing it. But maybe I don't know, maybe they're just going to put her out of her misery. You know what I mean? Like, the Academy is just going to say, like, screw it. I don't think it's remotely the most deserving performance within that category. But, you know, I think I'm going dark again is what I'm saying. I think we live in the worst of all possible worlds, given everything, and that this will be the thing that finally gives Glenn Close an Oscar, rather than Maria Bakalova, who honestly deserves it. Or actually any of these women do. I haven't seen The Father, but I assume Olivia Colman's good. But yikes. Yeah, I think I'm going to go dark again and say Glenn Close winning.
Yeah, the supporting actress category is totally wide open. There really isn't a front runner, so it's definitely possible. And I've heard a number of people saying, like, well, that movie's not good, but you have to give Glenn credit. She's great in it. And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, I don't know. I think that's just like, you know, just like you've been kidnapped and been brainwashed. You're just like clinging onto something. Like, well,
called at Stockholm least we syndrome, have this. Sweetheart.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, I mean, only one of these actresses almost was attacked by Rudy Giuliani on camera. So I feel like, you know, fair, like, you have to give her something for that, right? Like, that's really, you know.
Well, I mean, the fact that she basically had to do performance art, you know, and like, basically, I mean, she had to get a job at that the place that sent her to interview him in the first place, right? So it's like,
yeah,
she had to convincingly play this person for a long period of time. She basically had to be an undercover agent. Like, I think just in terms of the work that had to be done, she probably had the hardest work to do of anyone in this group, realistically.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis gets a lot of, you know, acclaim for his method acting, but did he ever go undercover in a right-wing, online news organization for 4 months?
Yeah, but like, sure, they probably faked a resume for her, but like, she had to still do the interview, one assumes. Like,
a lot of other ones too,
because there's thing of the group.
There's other clips in that movie where it's just like videos of her being like an interviewer for this news network that's online, where she's like interviewing people who think COVID is a hoax and stuff. She literally was risking her life doing that because she couldn't have the mask on. It was like at the height of the pandemic. It was incredibly, like, you know, very dangerous to her bodily health, and like that level of commitment. I don't know, maybe we shouldn't award that, honestly, the more I'm talking about it, but it's certainly more of a commitment than any of these other actresses gave.
And well, in theory, she probably put herself in some sort of danger. Like, you know, there's the fear of retribution post all of that, realistically. It's
absolutely.
So many, like, you know, she could, obviously people know who she is, but like, she could get doxxed at any second. It's just like such a risk. It's such a risk, truly.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I think it's like the most, if you want to call all of it acting, like, basically, like, it's the most difficult thing of the year. But like, I don't know. It's wild. Especially because she's also working off of not a script. She's living in this like insane world. I think, like, for me, it's the most work of anyone of the year. But like, you know, of course, but I just still think it's, you know, Glenn's got a huge chance of winning because.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that Maria never established was whether she was a good Terminator, a bad Terminator, or a neutral Terminator. So, you know, that might be what costs her. So, Justin, how about you? What's your bold prediction?
You know, so I went with original screenplay is going to be won by Emerald Fennell as opposed to Aaron Sorkin. So here's my thinking behind that. Sorkin has already won an Oscar for one thing, albeit for adapted. So this would be his first win for original. But I just feel like there seems to be a lot of, I don't even know if it's love or just like respect for what this film is doing, and the fact that it is at the very least tackling the Me Too movement, if not as you said, Marissa, really doing it in a satisfying way. But it seems like just with every other nomination it got, it seems like there might be I think the Academy wants to award it in some way, and I think this might be the place to do it. I'm thinking of a few years ago when Jordan Peele won for Get Out, when that film definitely got a lot of buzz but didn't ultimately win Best Picture, and I don't think Promising Young Woman is going to win Best Picture. It just seems to me like the place to award it. And I think if Sorkin had not won before, I think this would be his, but the fact that he did makes me think that it might go to Fennell. And if that happens, I think that'd be really interesting. And I don't know if Sorkin needs another Oscar, quite frankly, and I just think it would be a way to award a film that at least seems to be very much talked about within the Academy.
I think right now the odds makers are kind of siding with you on that one. I feel like right now the Promising Young Woman is edging out Trial of the Chicago 7 in terms of what we expect to happen, but it's certainly interesting to see. You know, there's a question of, will it get awarded here? Will it get awarded in actress? I feel like it might get awarded in both places, but people seem to think it's going to be like one or the other. And I'll be very interested to see what happens. What do you think, Marissa?
Well, I was just going to say that the idea that Promising Young Woman could in any way would maybe win Best Picture would be like my Joker moment, truly. I just had the thought while Justin was talking that would be like such a nightmare to me. I think Carey Mulligan has a good chance of winning for Best Actress. That field is a little wide open to me as well, I would say. The actress races are just really exciting this year. But yeah, I think that's right about the screenplay, and like I said, I have serious problems with the screenplay, frankly, but I do think Emerald Fennell is a really interesting voice, and I don't think it would be a bad thing necessarily if the Academy and therefore the Hollywood establishment gave her that sort of like seal of approval, and she kept doing more work. I don't think this piece works entirely, but I would certainly be interested to see future stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting because if you were like, okay, it's nominated for director, lead actress, and screenplay, and it only can get one, which is the one that you would want it to get, like I would put screenplay as third among three, because I agree, I think that's where a lot of the film's problems are, but in the way that Oscars prioritize things, it often feels like screenplay ends up being a consolation prize for a movie that people respected but didn't quite like enough to give Best Picture. And so I could definitely see that happening with this one. For me, my bold prediction is I kind of did a little bit of research to back me up here, because I noticed that Chloe Zhao is nominated for four Oscars this year. She's nominated for Picture as a producer on the film. She's Nomadland. She's nominated for director, obviously. She's nominated for adapted screenplay as the screenwriter on the film. And she's also nominated for editing. Because she's very uncommon, but every once in a while this happens where the director actually is the editor of the film as well. And my bold prediction is that she's going to win all four of them. That's what I'm rooting for to happen, and that would be so exciting. If she did, she would be the second person ever to win four Oscars on the same night. The only other person to have done it, do any of you guys know?
Mm-mm.
Is it Bong Joon-ho?
No, he won three last year. The only other one to do it is Walt Disney in 1953, which he won that year. He swept all three shorts categories and he won for Best Documentary for a movie about the animals in the American Southwest, which is so random to me. But yeah, that's the only time it's ever happened. And there's been 11 people who have gotten 3 wins in 1 year. It's pretty much, the most common examples are direct writer directors who have won picture, director, and screenplay. So for that, you have Bong Joon-ho for Parasite. You have Inyo Ritu for Birdman. You have the Coen brothers for No Country for Old Men. You have Peter Jackson for Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. You also have James L. Brooks for Terms of Endearment. Francis Ford Coppola for The Godfather Part II. And Billy Wilder was the first ever to get 3 in a year in 1960 for The Apartment. A couple of other people who got 3, because I researched it, so why not share? Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, if everyone remembers, really swept that Oscars in 2003. Peter Jackson's co-writer on the screenplay, Fran Walsh, won for picture, adapted screenplay, and she wrote the original song that also won. So she got 3 that year as well. And then James Cameron in 1997 for Titanic got picture, director, and editing. The only person to have won 3 in a night who is not a director is Marvin Hamlisch in 1973. Hmm. Back then, there were 2 score categories. There was an original score and an adapted score category. And so he won both of them. He won for original score for The Way We Were and adapted score for The Sting. And he also won for original song for The Way We Were. So, that's all of the people who Chloe Zhao could be joining in history next month. And, you know, I think there's a really good chance that she'll win 3. And I think it's possible that she could win all 4. And I would be really excited to see that. Right now, film editing, it seems like the odds makers have Sound of Metal as the top one, and I can kind of understand that. I feel like that's more of a movie that has better sound editing than it does film editing, and I wonder if there's kind of just like a little bit of a permeability in how people are thinking about that. But I think if the Oscars really go crazy for Nomadland, like I hope they do, she could end up being the second person ever to get 4 nominations, 4 wins in a night, and that would be super exciting.
That'd be such a throw.
And I feel like that's not even part of the conversation right now. I don't think people realize that that would be a record that she could do. But I wonder if, you know, Fox Searchlight will start to build that into the campaign as we get deeper into award season. Because people love it when, you know, when there's a chance to break a record or tie a record, at least. So that'd be super exciting. Yep. And imagine, like, Walt Disney's record being shared with Chloe Zhao. Like, that would be... love that. I would love that.
So first a question.
Sure.
Parasite won at least 4 Oscars last time, right?
Yeah.
Director, screenplay. But he did not.
Yeah, I believe it won, like, I think it won, I think in addition to picture, director, and screenplay, it also won, like, cinematography, and I think it maybe won even production design. I can't recall, but he specifically
won international feature as well as regular best picture.
Okay. That's what I figured. Because I was like, wait, didn't it win? But yeah, okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and technically, if you win international feature, the director usually goes up to accept the award, but the director doesn't get to keep that award. That goes to the country.
Yeah.
So that's a thing that people don't always know. Yeah. So that technically isn't a Bong Joon-ho award win, even though it looked like it on Oscar night.
Yeah, I will say, just to speak to your prediction, like the only thing I could, the one category that might be a bit of a, it's possible, like just a bit of a hoop to jump through might be the editing. Just given like the past 10 years, you've got things like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Argo, Gravity, Whiplash, Hacksaw Ridge, Dunkirk, Bohemian Rhapsody, Ford v Ferrari. Like they're all either action, they involve action in some way, or they involve some sort of dynamic aspect to them, which is why I was actually thinking maybe it's going to go to Trial of the Chicago 7, because that's the one in a year that didn't really have a lot of blockbusters that might get some attention. But, you know, it's definitely possible. And if there's momentum on her side, then it could happen.
And I think that Nomadland does, like, it does have a lot of montage sequences where the editing is, like, crucial to the flow of the film in a way that I think could resonate with people.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's also a good point that Trial of the Chicago 7 could be the, like, you know, if right now it could be something big, but maybe let's say it gets, like, it doesn't have the big buzz. So that would be something like, that would be the kind of category that would be an easy win for it, to get, like, something. It's a down, it's sort of a, like a down ballot race kind of, or down ballot category, as it were. And, like, that would be an obvious, like, okay, well, we liked this movie a lot, but we don't think it gets any of the big awards. Maybe it would sneak away with, like, a smaller one like this.
Yeah, I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I just have a feeling that it's going to get shut out this year. I think, like, Mank has the most nominations, and I think I like Mank a lot less than I like Chicago 7, which is a movie that I think is good but not great. But I think that Mank has a better chance at some of the technical awards than Chicago 7 does. Because it's just not, it's just a very... It looks like a movie that was made for TV. Like, people talk all the, like, they dinged these play adaptations so much for not being cinematic. But, like, this movie looks like an HBO original movie, and that's fine. Like, some of those movies are good, but this is not I don't know. I would be surprised that it got technical wins. But, we do also have Noah's bold prediction, and I'm gonna read that now. He says that he thinks that this will be the first year ever where all four acting wins will go to people of color. So that would be Bozeman and Davis for lead performances, and Kaluuya and Yeon for supporting. And I mean, two of them are heavily favored, so we definitely see that. And the other, both actor and supporting actor are the heavy favorites. And for, you know, actress and supporting actress, as we've said, those are pretty open right now. So definitely seems possible. What do you think about that, Marissa?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if the buzz is strong enough for Davis at the moment. If she hadn't won one a few years ago, I think maybe we would have, maybe it would be more of the conversation. But you know, I think Chadwick Boseman's performance is so incredible in that, and I think it's like the leader in the conversation. Although he could still be right if Andre Day wins. I think I really liked that performance in a deeply flawed film, I would say. But you know, that Golden Globe win was really nice to see. And a Golden Globe win means nothing in terms of actual voting. But if you are if you give a nice speech or are so excited, or, if you come off very likable on that broadcast, it can give people a boost. And that movie came out so late that I don't think it had that second to get the buzz going. So I don't know. I think it's possible. I mean, I'm pulling for her, but yeah, like, I don't know. It's the acting, like, the actress categories are so wide open that it's totally possible that what he's saying is true. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say. I don't know.
Yeah, Justin, do you have a reaction to that?
Yeah, I just wonder. I wonder if Davis might be a bit of a stretch. You know, I think it seems to be Mulligan and perhaps even McDormand right now, and I don't know. I really don't want to count McDormand out, even though she's won twice before. I feel like she's really liked within the industry. With there not being a clear front runner, sometimes it's the Academy will kind of go with what they know, and I feel like that's someone who, and it's, you know, if they like the film enough, then that might be another thing to award. But I like the sentiment behind it. I mean, Yoon, I think might have a bigger chance of getting it, because I think for people who have seen that movie, they know just how, not just how good she is in that movie, but how likable the character she plays is. Like, there's definitely this sense that she could win people's hearts, I think, if they've seen that movie. And yeah, I think that's not something you should discount. Yeah,
I think that she is the thing that you walk away, like, thinking about when you watch that movie. And that's a huge help in these sorts of conversations. And if if the Best Picture buzz around Minari is real, even if that doesn't mean it's going to win Best Picture, but if there's enough of a group of support around it that it really is a contender, like a serious contender, then I think that that's going to most benefit Yun. So I really think that she has a chance in supporting, because as we said, it's a pretty wide open field. And, you know, with actress, I think that Davis is just taken advantage of taken for granted, I should say, in these discussions. Like, we just are like, yeah, she's one of our best actresses. And of course, you know, and you look at the amount of awards that she's won, like, most of it is like Emmys, you know, like for like a Shonda Rhimes show. It's like, no disrespect, but she really deserves to be in the conversation, like with Meryl Streep, with like dozens and dozens of nominations. And she should be the one with like two wins under her belt trying to get the third, and I just think we're taking her for granted. But I do think that the conversation is taking her for granted, so I would be surprised to see her win. It would be really exciting to see Andra Day win for United States versus Billie Holiday, because I watched that movie after she won the Golden Globe, and that movie, as we've said, it's a mess. It's a Lee Daniels movie. It's got a lot of problems. She is so incredible in it that it's the type of movie that I would have wanted to turn off halfway through, because I'm just like, this is just not working for me. But I couldn't look away from her because she was just incredible. Like, every second on screen was incredible. It's just like, I had never seen her before in anything. I know she's done some TV work that I'm not familiar with. I just think this is such an incredible performance. It's probably my favorite performance in the category. Mm-hmm. And I think Mulligan is really doing a lot of work to try to make Promising Young Women work, even in moments when it doesn't. And I think Frances McDormand, you know, she worked opposite all of these amateur actors. She was able to kind of meet them where they were and give this really naturalistic performance. And so much of it is just tight close-ups on her face. And it's a really challenging role. I just don't know if the Oscars are looking at her as the type of actress that they would give a third like Oscar nomination to, or Oscar win to. People get kind of sensitive about that sort of stuff, so that's kind of my hesitation there. So I think there's a real shot for a day, and I would be so ecstatic if that was the case. And you know, Oscars love to award an ingenue.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for it, because I agree. I think that is the most incredible performance of the year of this group. And these are, I like all of these performances, truly. But yeah, I just think it was shocking how good it was. I mean, I'd heard, and then I was still like so compelled by it. Every second was interesting. Every choice was interesting. Not a bad moment in the whole movie for her.
No, and so much range too. Like, she's really doing so many different things. Like, she's playing comedy, she's playing drama, she's playing trauma, she's playing sexy, she's playing like so many different things. And she sings those songs incredibly on top of it. So yeah,
the performance is so good that I was almost like, why didn't we put her in more lead stuff earlier on? Jesus Christ, why did it take us so long? This is incredible. I mean, Lee Daniels pulled out an incredible performance from her. And obviously, I'm not discounting her work, but like, thank God for him seeing it and saying like, let's put her in this film. Like, he's not the greatest director of all time, but he does like notice like actors and like bring interesting things out of them, or put someone in an acting role who like you wouldn't expect to be great. And like, what a gift that performance is, because like, Jesus, it's just like, I was floored by it. I really was.
Yeah, I mean, he's responsible for Mariah Carey's best work as an actress as well. So. All right. But on that note, that's going to do it for us for today. You can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Media Thinkings, on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. You can follow my TV podcast over at Pop Break TV. I have two running there, monthly TV Break and Goodbye to All That. You can check that stuff out over there. Justin, where can we find more of your stuff on the internet?
So you can find my work on thecinemaverick.com. That's where I post reviews, annual roundups. That's kind of the main thing I've been doing recently. And you can also find me, I'm on another podcast that I started with Noah, as well as his brother Luke, that has since been completed. It's called Pod on the Rooftops. It's a podcast about Genesis. It is part of the Pop Breaks Breakcast podcast network, and you can find us on, it's probably best to find us on that website specifically and just search us. Pod on the Rooftops. So if you like Genesis, or even if you haven't heard of them and you want to hear us talk about them, you know, we welcome all, and we hope that we can share the love a little bit with all of you.
And Marissa, saving the best for last, where can we find your stuff online?
I will be writing stuff for the Pop Break and doing, you know, more and more Oscar coverage on there as we approach the awards. And then also, you know, you can go there for my our past Oscar podcast to talk about like random years. We actually mentioned a couple years we're going to be covering in this, Yentl and then Terms of Endearment, which are actually technically the same year. But, you know, yeah, look for that. And then, well, we'll start airing those once this year Oscars ends. And then any writing I'll do will be on the Pop Break, which is intermittent at the moment because Oscars are my whole life for the next month or so.
Yeah, and if I'm familiar with the plan, it still is that you guys are going to be running kind of almost like daily podcast episodes covering all the nominees. Yes. For like the 2 weeks prior to the Oscar night, correct?
Yeah, typically what we do is we go through every category and do an individual episode for every category that's like, you know, 20, 30 minutes long. That said, this year we are refusing to see a few things. Usually Matt and I are completists, but, you know, spoiler alert, we will not be watching Pinocchio.
I think that's fair. There's certainly been too many Pinocchios already, and we have more to come. So people, I don't blame you for skipping out this one.
Yeah. we have to practice self-care after last year, and that's how we're doing it.
Also, I had to recently explain the plot of the story of Pinocchio to a child recently, and he was horrified to learn that that's what that movie was about. So I think it's probably good for everyone's sake if you guys spare yourself that.
Yeah.
All right, so that's going to do it for us. Thank you, everyone who tuned in, and, you know, we'll see what happens next month when the Oscars air at the end of April. Until then, I'll see you guys later.